Welcome to the Passive Income Through Multifamily Real Estate Podcast, brought to you by Vertical Street Ventures, where we talk to top experts and seasoned investors to help provide clarity and key insights to keep you safe on your journey to financial freedom. Our goal is to help you get educated on how to create passive income for you and your family using real estate as your vehicle. If you enjoy the show, please go to iTunes and leave a rating and a written review to help us grow and reach more listeners.
Hey everyone, I'm excited to introduce you to our newest host that we're bringing onto the podcast team. His name is Peter Pomeroy. I've had the pleasure of getting to know Peter over the last year, and his growth in this space has been tremendous. He comes from a background in commercial real estate, and I know you're going to enjoy all the value he's going to bring to the show. He is now an owner-operator himself in the multifamily space, so welcome Peter Pomeroy.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Passive Income Through Multifamily Real Estate Podcast. I am your host, Peter Pomeroy, and today we have Diana Lynn with us. Diana is focused on acquisitions and strategic direction and asset management for Navi Ventures. She is an AIA licensed architect with over 10 years of experience as a project manager and project architect in New York, Texas, and China. She designed and managed large-scale award-winning buildings in office, multifamily, hospitality, and retail. She was a member of the ULI Young Leaders Group Partnership Forum and a graduate of the AIA Dallas Emerging Leaders Program. Diana received her Bachelor of Architecture from Cornell University. Diana, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Peter.
Absolutely. So we've got a lot to talk about, probably more than we have time. But let's get into it. So take us through your background and specifically kind of how you went from, you know, working for a large architecture firm that, you know, well-known, stable, to now running Navi Ventures.
Yeah, for sure. So I started into architecture full-time and been practicing architecture for about 10 years. As you mentioned already, I worked in New York and China, and also right now currently in Texas. When I was working full-time as an architect, basically 9-to-5 job, I kind of was aware about the benefits of real estate, but not too familiar with it. So I started to dabble more into it, look more into it, and realized that there is a lot of opportunity to be had in real estate. So I just kind of looked at my husband, back then was my boyfriend, and we had just kind of decided to make a strategic effort to start to educate ourselves on how we can get a little bit more of a portfolio of real estate. So
it sounds like it was, sorry to interject, it sounds like it was a very intentional decision.
Yes.
Like you like were living in like a, you know, rundown house or whatever that you own, and you fix it up while living there, and you realize, oh, wait, maybe I can make some money doing this. All right.
I mean, I believe is I would give credit to my sister, who's kind of been, actually I have a twin sister, so she's also in real estate.
Well, now I got to ask, identical twin?
Identical twin. She's also in Dallas. And
I'm just going to do a shout out. So I have my daughters, Piper and Pierre, who turned 17 yesterday, are identical twins.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's great.
Identical twins. You
still identical. Tell right? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she was acquiring a couple of single family properties with her husband and always been encouraging me to get into it. And I was just kind of more on a fence. It's like, I don't know, maybe should I? And just kind of wanted to push my husband. It's like, hey, maybe we should. And finally, you know, instead of actually going for single family, we went for multifamily. So we joined a mentorship group to purely kind of educate ourselves in Dallas, right? And so
was that a paid mentorship group?
It is, yes.
Okay. So you invested in an educational platform.
Correct.
To kind of advance yourself. Okay.
Exactly. And I mean, it was kind of backwards. You know, a lot of people who start in multifamily space, they start with single family. And then once they get a big portfolio of single family, then they get into multifamily to scale up. We started into multifamily. And so after we invested a couple of deals in multifamily, then we're like, you know what, let's diversify and do single family. So we kind of stepped back and got some single family. But yeah, and when we actually joined a mentorship group to actually educate ourselves and also have opportunities to network and meet those individuals that are in the space to invest into their deals, we were both still working a full-time job. I was an architect, and my husband, who's also a partner in Navi Ventures, he's a real estate lawyer. So we essentially just kind of stay put in our job and just kind of watch some of the real estate passive investments that we've done to see how it would perform over time. So that was kind of our strategy, is to first dabble and really educate ourselves and see how this product of multifamily investing actually work, because we weren't quite sure whether it's actually going to prove itself out, right? I mean, so I was an architect, and when after a couple of years, I decided, you know, full-time into being an architect or into a W-2 job is actually going to limit my potential to explore more into real estate. So when we, my husband and I discussed about what we should do, is like, you know what, I first of all also kind of want to do my own architecture projects. So I made a decision really to kind of leave my W-2 job and to try to do my own architecture project, but also to do more real estate investing. So once we did that, after a couple of years, we actually saw some of the passive investments that we've done to come full cycle in 3 years instead of the typical 5-year underwriting, right? So we saw the strength and the potential for how real estate can really help accelerate yourself to become more of an independent financially, right? So we kind of decided to, from there, full on try to launch Navi Ventures to actively become more of a deal sponsor rather than as a passive investor. And that's where we are right now.
Got it. That's great. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like, well, a couple things. One is you had the full-time architecture job. When you left, you started a business, you know, to do architecture as an independent architect. And that helped you bridge the gap, or, you know, the help with the transition. And then the other thing I heard is that you made investments as a limited partner in a number of, you know, deals to, you know, one, determine whether or not, you know, multifamily investing like had legs to it.
Right.
And also, you know, to learn about how to do it if it was something you guys wanted to do.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So with respect to so how many LP and investments have both of you made?
So we've invested in 1,200 units to date, and 570 of those units were sold last year.
Wow, that's terrific. All right. So a bunch. So how did you find your first investment? And this question is for, you know, the listener who is where you were then, and they're wanting to invest in an investment, and, you know, did they Google, you know, how does it work? I mean, I'm sure it's a quick answer, but.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, when we kind of joined the mentorship group, you kind of have access to many individuals who have deals themselves. A lot of deal flow is going through that group. And if there are people who aren't quite sure about, not ready yet to join a mentorship group, but just wants to be exposed to it, I would encourage to go to a lot of multifamily meetups where you will have contacts and access to a multifamily deal sponsor and get the business card and see what kind of deals they kind of send out to you, review them and decide whether or not it works with your investment criteria. So one of the reasons why we joined a group is just to like help us assess a multifamily deal and help us also access to a bunch of people in that group who has deal flows going through. So that's what I would encourage for anyone that's interested in to actually getting into their first limited partner passive investments, is to literally just put yourself out there, meet those individuals. You can even do that online. You just kind of access a Facebook group and start to network. And really, you need to have that networking aspect in there, especially if you want to invest in a deal that's a 506B offering.
And what's a 506B offering? What does that mean?
506B offering, you have to have a prior existing relationship in order to invest in those deals. So that's an important one. There's also a 506C offering where you have to meet a certain criteria, and you don't have to have you still do need to have technically a prior relationship, but those are two different kind of offerings that you kind of have to read about it before you actually invest in them.
All right. Excellent. Thank you. So, you know, it's your first, you and Steve, it's your first LP investment. Like, what did that, like, due diligence of the sponsor, the product, the market, like, generally look like versus, you know, your seventh or sixth or whatever, you know, down the line when you're, you know, you've learned?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's still a learning process. It's always going to be a learning process no matter what. And when we first assessed or analyzed our first multifamily deal, we're just kind of, it's always so nerve-wracking just investing your first deal. Just kind of oh my God, is this going to be the worst decision of my life or is this going to be awesome, right? You don't know until you try. So we actually pulled the trigger onto a first deal in Abilene, Texas. And we basically looked at the numbers and what we're trained to look at as an underwriting, see if it's conservative, the market is good, the location is great, the deal sponsors. We didn't look too much into the deal sponsor. We met them, but we didn't put too much emphasis on it, right? But we essentially, you know, did that deal, then another deal, another 2 months after, and then maybe another deal 3 months after that. What we learned from our passive investments is that in the end, looking at what deals actually went full cycle and did well, right? So we had about 4 deals last year that went full cycle, right? And we had returns between 1.8 to 2.4, right?
And so Diana's talking, just for those that don't know, she's talking about the equity multiplier. So you invest $100,000 just as a number. 1.4 is you get $140,000 back, you know, and so that's a, you know, 40% profit on your capital, and you can do the math with the 2.01.
Correct. Yeah. So 100,000 into a deal and you get initial capital back of 100,000 and your profit of $40,000. So with the 4 deals that we invested, usually they're typically underwritten for about 5-year hold. We have some of our deals because of the market that really helped, that we had between 1.8 to 2.4. And it's kind of important to kind of determine whether you're including the cash flow in that equity multiplier. So those, the multiplier actually includes the cash flow, right? So when we had some of the deals that went full cycle last year and kind of looked at what did well, what did not do so well, right? We realized very quickly that it's honestly the people that are running the deals, right? So the numbers are good and gravy and everything looks great on paper, right? And you see the location, you see the numbers, everything checks the check boxes, right? But it really kind of depends on whether the deal sponsor can actually execute that business plan, right? Do you trust that business partner, or not business partner, the deal sponsor, right, to execute their business plan? If the deal sponsor is disorganized and not on top of things, then you're not going to get the best product in the end. So it's really important to actually know the deal sponsor before you invest in a deal. And that's why we have, the SEC has these rulings in place, so you can actually have a prior existing relationship. So you don't lose money. You make that assessment. So just over couple years of experience and just seeing what did well from our portfolio of deals that we have is, oh, it's the people. I mean, it's not really the just the person, right? But it is, to me, I think makes a big factor, right? It's the numbers of the project as well as the person who's able to actually execute on the vision and business plan of the deal.
So that's, I mean, I think that's like spot on for generally how people look at a deal. First, they look at the number. First, they go straight to the return. You know, what's the IRR? What's the equity multiplier? And in this environment of like accelerated depreciation, what's, you know, bonus depreciation look like, if anything? And then it's like, well, let's understand the sponsor a little bit. And it seems to me that with more experience, people still look at the numbers. Obviously, you have to do that and the assumptions and, you know, can you defend them? But they, you know, almost equal or additional amount of time spent on getting to know and understanding the sponsor, which is a little bit of a tricky, you know, not the easiest, at least I don't think the easiest thing to do, because, you know, sponsors are running a business and yes, they want to talk to investors, but how do you go from like, you know, chit chats on the phone, maybe even a couple times or 3 times to like getting a sense of the sponsor and how, like, you know, they may perform kind of on at an intuitive gut level.
Right. Yeah, that's really hard to say, really, because if you're eager to invest in your first deal, you don't really have a lot of time to develop that relationship. It's kind of really make how you having to do your own due diligence and making that judgment call, right? So I would say if they're an experienced deal sponsor, talk to other people that's invested in their deal, whether they're happy, right? And so they probably can give you a list of references of passive investors they've had. But if you're in a multifamily network, then you'll be able to kind of hear chitters and chatters of like what their reputation is. If you heard that this deal sponsor isn't so great, don't invest with them. But if you heard if they're like, you know, hitting the returns and if not more, I would, you know, take that as part of the judgment call, right? And not just hearing what they say, but to also make your own judgment call by actually setting up a call with them and talking and asking the questions that's important to you as an investor.
Right. I mean, I've heard, I mean, what I, and I'm sure you've heard the same thing, that, you know, one of the big evaluating criteria for our sponsors, how well they communicate with their investors. I've heard people say, I'm not going to get this entirely right, but that an investment with a sponsor where the returns are like not what they expected, but not terrible either, kind of middle of the road, but the sponsor communicated very effectively, regularly with their investors, those investors will want to invest with that person again, versus a sponsor who might hit the returns, but have, terrible communication. So you never know what's up and down. From very sophisticated LP investors, their view is it's great that we hit the returns, but it's just too much kind of uncertainty because of the communication or poor communication element.
I actually agree 100%. And, one of the deals that didn't hit the numbers that we expected, even though the equity multiplier is great, it's like, 1.8, that's actually not that bad. But but we didn't get monthly updates. We didn't get a lot of updates. And so when the sales proceed came, got posted, and it's like, this is actually pretty good. But, we didn't know what to expect because we weren't kept in the loop of what to expect, right?
Right, right.
So I think that is very important. I probably would prefer to have a deal sponsor that is pretty honest about where we are in a certain deal so we can at least, adjust our expectation.
That's terrific. I think that's very helpful what you've said. So moving over to Navi Ventures, just tell us about your business, what you focus on, where you focus, and we'll go get into it.
Yes. So Navi Ventures, we look at properties. We're looking for properties about C or B class properties. Right now, we're trying to look at a little smaller deal between 50 to 150 units. We want to focus a little bit more onto Dallas just because we're actually based here in Dallas, but we're also looking in the Arizona market as well. And so we are just looking for deals that has a lot of value, provides a lot of value, and also for us to really come in and help improve an apartment community, right? So that's kind of what we are doing currently. And at the moment, we have a deal that we're operating at the moment as a general partner, our first one. So that's exciting.
That's fun. Sure it is. So where is that located?
So that one's located in Glendale, Arizona.
Okay, so Glendale, Arizona. And how did that deal come about?
Yeah. So last year, when we're deciding about if we should become more of a deal sponsor than a past investor, we actually were researching mentorship groups that would kind of help us get there. Because we know from our exposure being in real estate and multifamily is that it really does help to, be in a mentorship group or select a mentor. So when we were actually looking around, we actually found Vertical Street Ventures. And Vertical Street Ventures, they just launched an academy, and we just said, "Hey, can we join?" And we joined, and literally, this is probably last year of August that we joined, and within a month, they had a deal that came through the group, and we were awarded this 22-unit apartment in Glendale, Arizona. So I thought that was just great because, usually for first timers like us, it takes a long time to find your first deal, so. What was amazing about Vertical Street Ventures Academy is the fact that they do have deal flows that go through their program. And not only do they have deal flows, but they offer to partner with first timers like us. And essentially, they have the kind of framework already set up for you to be successful. So not only are they continue to be your mentor, they're also your partner in the deal. So when we first got into the deal, I flew over to Phoenix and went to the property in Glendale to do the due diligence with Vertical Street Ventures team and came back and did some comps. They already had the property manager selected and set up. They had mortgage broker, insurance brokers, right? So we didn't have to start scrambling for it when, with a deal pretty much in contract, right? They've already had it ready for you. So I thought that was just great to kind of at least try to understand the whole process of how to close the deal. So
and jumpstart your, GP acquisition.
Exactly.
Program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And so when we went through the process of raising capital, they also assisted in raising capital as well. And so the property was a $3.425 million purchase price, and the equity raise was $1.4 million, right? So we worked together with the Vertical Street Ventures to raise that capital, and it was just a smooth process. It was great. We also did a investor webinar, and they basically were in part of the webinar to contribute as well. So every step of the way, they were part of the process to kind of give us mentorship and guidance of what is typical, what should you do, right?
So what's great about this is that, you know, Vertical Street Ventures, they're acting as a true partner with you. They're your, you know, I mean, yes, they're like, you know, the Academy is an educational platform. And one element of it is that they, you know, if these deals that are maybe too small for them, you know, and if they make sense, you know, they offer to the, you know, students, but they're also like, it's not like they're just unloading it on you saying best of luck. They're there right, you know, by your side as a general partner. So that's terrific.
Yeah. Yeah. They provided the structure, honestly, to help us succeed in the project, right? They won't hand it to you and said, all right, see you later, right? They actually are going to be part of it to ensure the project success, right? Because they have inherent interest for not just ourselves, but the whole company to succeed because they're the mentors, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's great. And so when you were raising capital, was this a 506C for accredited investors?
It was or 506B offering.
Mm-hmm. And what was the, like, or what were your fine, like, what was your motivation to do a 506B?
Yeah.
So I know it was a joint decision, but like,
oh, yeah.
your right, motivation. Right. And then what were your findings at the end of that
right,
process?
Right. What was great about being part of the group and partnering with Vertical Street Ventures is that it was really up to us, my husband and I, to decide whether we want to do a 506B or C, right? So since it was our first general partner deal, as well as first raise, and not knowing whether or not we can raise the amount, we opted for a 506B offering, which we believe will cast a wider net of investors to come invest in your property. So that's what we did. The only downside that we found from 506B is that you can't advertise on any sort of social media platform. So we really had to kind of work with the contacts that we had, right? Anyways, so in the end, what we found at the end of the raise is that we only had one or two investors that or 506B, everyone else would have qualified for 506C. So now that we've been exposed to our investor database and what we can raise, now we know confidently and comfortably that we can do a 506C offering for our next deal.
That's great. So with respect to raising capital and having investors, we talked earlier about how different sponsors that kind of indirectly or directly convey certain attributes of how they will manage a project and manage the investors. What do you guys like hope to convey or are conveying to your investors? Like just a couple words, three words even.
Right. So you meant that what did we do to keep them in the loop during the management of the property?
Well, yeah, no, it's kind of an abstract question, but what do you think I'll say it maybe a different way. What do you think your investors found attractive about you guys as a partnership, Anavi, and you know, obviously the deal, but let's leave that aside. What do they find attractive about you? And what do you hope that they do find attractive about you so that they keep investing with you? Like it's kind of almost like, what is your brand as it relates
right,
to investors?
Right, yeah. Right. I mean, we like to kind of leverage our background to kind of help us sort of tell them that we aren't just inexperienced people that just got into real estate. My background as an architect, I've been building buildings, right? Designing buildings for 10 years. So I know very well the ins and outs of how a building operates and function. And anything that would happen, I would kind of be able to think quickly on my feet. My husband, his background really is more of a finance and legal side. So, I mean, he has his like CPA, CFA, right? And so he's very knowledgeable. He's knowledgeable in the finance aspect, and he's also very good in the legal aspect as well. So we kind of combine our powers, I would say, and use that to kind of have our investors feel comfortable to invest with us. And also we like to leverage our partners' experience as well, which is Vertical Street Ventures. And they're the one that has the portfolio of real estate and experience to help us kind of be successful. So our investors, they feel pretty comfortable investing with us and just talking to us and us talking to them literally would just have them feel very good about what we can do. And so, yeah, I mean, I thought that it was a pretty seamless process.
Right. Terrific. So stepping back for a minute, let's talk a little bit about goals for your business. What are your goal for your business? What are your goals for within 12 months from today? So May 6th. recording date, Mason?
Well, we want to kind of set more of a realistic expectation, right? So I would say that our goal in 1 year would be to have at least 3 to 4 apartment deals, right? Doesn't matter how many, it really is just kind of like get a couple under our belt and see how we can operate those properties well, right?
Right. So that's interesting versus like, oh, we want to have 125 doors,
yeah,
which right. might happen all at once. What you're saying is 3 or 4 properties,
yes.
actual building. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
That's kind of how we're thinking too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even though our first deal sponsor, our first property is 22 unit, right? It seemed like a lot of work. Like it was a lot of work just to, you know, do the whole closing process. So now it makes sense why a lot of people would scale up into 125, 250, because it's the same amount of work, except just maybe a little bit more. But we aren't trying to hit a certain metric in terms of unit numbers, but it's more of to get enough buildings under our belt to get a little bit more experience and understanding, right?
Okay, so then let's bounce out to 5 years out for you and Stephen. What are your goals? 5 years, 7 years, kind of just longer term?
Yeah, I mean, well, 5 years, I mean, we're hoping that we would at least have all of our passive investments kind of replace our active income. So I'm the full-time real estate professional between me and Stephen, and Stephen is the one who is full-time on his W-2 job. So the goal is we get enough investments in real estate where he can just leave his job and not our family wouldn't be dependent on his job, his insurance to maintain our lifestyle. So we're hoping maybe 5 years or less, but we're hoping by that time, once he's able to kind of leave his W-2 job, we would be both be able to spend more time with our kids. So we have a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old at the moment. I'll tell Stephen after this interview that that by the time our 8-year-old and like 6-year-old, you know, by the time it's their birthday, he better be retired by then. So.
Right. Right. I think you got at the why. I was going to ask like why that financial freedom is important to you. We hear financial freedom all the time, and it's important to pause and be like and ask what that means for you. You know, you shared time with your children. Is there any other like kind of elements to the why being financially free?
Oh, yeah. I mean, children is a big part of it. But even before our second one was born, when my husband was actually talking to his partners about basically taking time off to basically spend time with our newborn. And I mean, they're a very family-oriented firm, but there is one question that really struck him and made him a little more motivated to try to get out of the rat race. But the question that he was given during that discussion with his partners is like, okay, great. You're going to take a couple of weeks off for your paternity leave, but keep in mind that you're still on point on these projects, right? Which is crazy because, I mean, you want to spend time with your newborn, but you're still expected to still deliver in your job, right?
Right, right.
So even during the paternity leave that he had, which is only just 2 weeks, honestly, right, he was still working a lot. And so he wasn't spending the time that he was hoping with his kids. So that kind of really propelled us to be a little bit more aggressive, trying to invest more in real estate to help us not be so dependent.
Yeah, that resonates with me. I understand that fully. And you know, the good news about that like kind of realization is that it happened kind of earlier. Like versus 10 years from now. And you're like, okay, now we got to do it.
Uh-huh.
All right. So as we close out, two last questions for you. First, you and Stephen have a very busy life. Stephen, as you said, he works full-time as a lawyer. You have 2 kids and your business, Navi Ventures, is really taking off. Do you have any practices or things that you do personally to stay grounded and refreshed amongst all of that activity?
An activity. Well, grabbing a cup of coffee is always important for me so just to kind of stay awake during the day because being a full-time mom and also full-time real estate is very tiring.
Right.
You don't really get to take a break when you're also a full-time mom. But yeah, I mean, you know, every weekend we try to kind of recharge and to regroup and try to remind ourselves of why we're still, you know, doing real estate. And so every time during the beginning of the week, we have a fresh set of mind and to kind of stay motivated in doing what we're doing.
All right. Same question as before in terms of the setup, in terms of your busyness and all. I'm going to focus a little bit more on the business, Navi Ventures. So what's the one thing, big or small, that would help your business, you know, leapfrog to the next level?
Yeah, I say this already, but it's, I feel like it's so important, is to literally find good partners, right? So good partners, not just like literal partners, but like vendors and investors, right? These people are really not the only, but it helps. It really helps to help catapult you to where you want to be, because it's a team effort. You can't do it by yourself. And so you have to rely on the expertise of others to help you be successful.
That's great. That's great. Diana, thank you for taking time with me and our listeners. I've learned a lot, and I know our listeners have as well. If listeners want to get a hold of you, what is the best way for them to do that?
Yeah. So you can reach me on my email. It's Diana@Navi-Ventures.com. You can also find our website, which is the same as similar to my email, naviventures.com, with a hyphen between Navi and Ventures. You can also find us on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and feel free to reach out to Peter to get all those contact information.
That's great. All right, I'll do it. And for listeners who would like to chat with me or have an interest in being on this show, please reach out to me through LinkedIn at Peter Pomeroy or our website, northlightgrowth.com. Diana, thank you so much, and terrific show. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please go to iTunes and leave a rating and written review to help us grow and reach more listeners. Subscribe too, so you can get the latest episodes. Lastly, to stay updated, head on over to verticalstreetventures.com. If you're interested in learning more about what we do, you can schedule a call with our team on the website. Thanks again for joining us. Be sure to tune in next week for another episode.